the 15th of November. Up and to Alderman Backwell's, and there discoursed with him about the remitting of this £6,000 to Tangier, which he hath promised to do by the first post, and that will be by Monday next, the 18th. And he and I agreed that I would take notice of it, so that he may be found to have done his best upon the desire of the Lord's Commissioners. From this we went to discourse of his condition, and he, with some vain glory, told me that the business of Sheerness did make him quite mad, and indeed might well have undone him, but yet that he did the very next day pay here, and got bills to answer his promise to the king for the Swedes ambassadors, who were then doing our business at the treaty at Breda, £7,000, and did promise the bankers there that if they would draw upon him all that he had of theirs, and £10,000 more, he would answer it. He told me that Sergeant Maynard came to him for a sum of money that he had in his hands of his, and so did many others, and his answer was, "What countrymen are you?" And when they told him, "Why then," says he, "here is a tally upon the receiver of your country for so, and to yours for so much," and did offer to lay by tallies to the full value of all that he owed in the world, and £40,000 more, for the security thereof, and not to touch a penny of his own till the full of what he owed was paid, which so pleased everybody, that he hath mastered all, so that he hath lent the commissioners of the treasury above £40,000 in money since that business, and did this morning offer to a lady who came to him to give him notice that she should need her money, £3,000 in 20 days, he bid her, if she pleased, send for it today, and she should have it, which is a very great thing, and will make them greater than ever they were, I'm apt to think, in some time. Thence to Westminster, and there I walked with several, and do hear that there is to be a conference between the two houses today. So I stayed, and it was only to tell the Commons that the Lords cannot agree to the confining or sequestering of the Earl of Clarendon from the Parliament, for as much as they do not specify any particular crime which they lay upon him, and call treason. This the House did receive, and so parted, at which I hear the Commons are like to grow very high, and will insist upon their privileges, and the Lords will on theirs, though the Duke of Buckingham, Bristol, and others have been very high in the House of Lords to have had him committed. This is likely to breed ill blood. Thence I away home, calling at my mercer and tailor's, and there find, as I expected, Mr. Caesar and little Pelham Humphreys, lately returned from France, and is an absolute monsieur, as full of form and confidence and vanity, and disparages everything and everybody's skill but his own. The truth is, everybody says he is very able, but to hear how he laughs at all the king's music here, as Blagrave and others, that they cannot keep time, nor tune, nor understand anything, and that Grabou, the Frenchman, the king's master of the music, how he understands nothing, nor can play on any instrument, and so cannot compose, and that he will give him a lift out of his place, and that he and the king are mighty great, and that he hath already spoke to the king of Grabou, would make a man piss. I had a good dinner for them, as a venison pasty and some fowl, and after dinner we did play, he on the theorbo, Mr. Caesar on his French lute, and I on the viol, but made but mean music, nor do I see that this Frenchman doth so much wonders on the theorbo, but without question he is a good musician, but his vanity doth offend me. They gone towards night, I to the office a while, and then home and to my chamber, where busy, till by and by comes Mr. Moore, and he stayed and supped and talked with me about many things, and tells me his great fears that all things will go to ruin among us, for that the king hath, as he says Sir Thomas Crewe told him, been heard to say that the quarrel is not between my Lord Chancellor and him, but his brother and him, which will make sad work among us if that be once promoted, as to be sure it will, Buckingham and Bristol being now the only counsel the king follows, so as Arlington and Coventry are come to signify little. He tells me they are likely to fall upon my Lord Sandwich, but for my part sometimes I am apt to think they cannot do him much harm, he telling me that there is no great fear of the business of resumption. By and by I got him to read of my Lord Cook's chapter of treason, which is mighty well worth reading, and doth inform me in many things, and, for aught I see, it is useful now to know what these crimes are. And then to supper, and after supper he went away, and so I got the girl to comb my head, and then to bed. My eyes bad. This day, Poundy, the waterman, was with me to let me know that he was summoned to bear witness against me to Prince Rupert's people, who have a commission to look after the business of prize goods, about the business of the prize goods I was concerned in. But I did desire him to speak all he knew and not to spare me, nor did promise or give him anything, but sent him away with good words, to bid him say all he knew to be true. This doth not trouble me much. The 16th of November. At the office all the morning and at noon took my Lord Brunker into the garden, and there told him of his man Carcass's proceedings against the office in the House of Commons. I did not desire nor advise him anything, but in general, that the end of this might be ruin to the office, but that we shall be brought to fencing for ourselves, and that will be no profit to the office. But let it light where it would, I thought I should be as well as anybody. This I told him, and so he seeming to be ignorant of it and not pleased with it, we broke off by Sir Thomas Harvey's coming to us from the pay office, whither we had sent a smart letter we had writ to him this morning about keeping the clerks at work at the making up the books, which I did to place the fault somewhere, and now let him defend himself. He was mighty angry, and particularly with me, but I do not care, but do rather desire it, for I will not spare him, that we shall bear the blame, and such an idle fellow as he have £500 a year for nothing. So we broke off, and I home to dinner, and then to the office. And having spent the afternoon on letters, I took coach in the evening, and to Whitehall, where there is to be a performance of music of Pelham's before the King. The company not come, but I did go into the music-room, where Captain Cook and many others. And here I did hear the best and the smallest organ go that ever I saw in my life, and such a one as by the grace of God I will have the next year, if I continue in this condition, whatever it cost me. I never was so pleased in my life. Thence, it being too soon, I to Westminster Hall, it being now about 7 at night, and there met Mr. Gregory, my old acquaintance, an understanding gentleman, and he and I walked an hour together talking of the bad prospect of the times. And the sum of what I learn from him is this, that the King is the most concerned in the world against the Chancellor, and all people that do not appear against him, and therefore is angry with the bishops, having said that he had one bishop on his side, Crofts, and but one. That Buckingham and Bristol are now his only cabinet council, and that before the Duke of York fell sick, Buckingham was admitted to the King of his cabinet, and there stayed with him several hours, and the Duke of York shut out. That it is plain that there is dislike between the King and Duke of York, and that it is to be feared that the House will go so far against the Chancellor that they must do something to undo the Duke of York, or will not think themselves safe. That this Lord Vaughan, that is so great against the Chancellor, is one of the lewdest fellows of the age, worse than Sir Charles Sedley, and that he was heard to swear, God damn him, he would do my Lord Clarendon's business. That he doth find that my Lord Clarendon hath more friends in both houses than he believes he would have, by reason that they do see what are the hands that pull him down, which they do not like. That Harry Coventry was scolded at by the King severely the other day, and that his answer was that if he must not speak what he thought in this business in Parliament, he must not come thither. And he says that by this very business, Harry Coventry hath got more fame and common esteem than any gentleman in England hath at this day, and is an excellent and able person. That the King, who not long ago did say of Bristol that he was a man able in 3 years to get himself a fortune in any kingdom in the world, and lose all again in 3 months, doth now hug him and commend his parts everywhere, above all the world. How fickle is this man, and how unhappy we like to be. That he fears some furious courses will be taken against the Duke of York, and that he hath heard that it was designed, if they cannot carry matters against the Chancellor, to impeach the Duke of York himself, which God forbid. That Sir Edward Nicholas, whom he served while secretary, is one of the best men in the world, but hated by the Queen Mother, for a service he did the old King against her mind and her favourites, and that she and my Lady Castlemaine did make the King to lay him aside. But this man says that he is one of the most perfect, heavenly, and charitable men in the whole world. that the House of Commons resolved to stand by their proceedings and chosen a committee to draw up the reasons thereof to carry to the Lords, which is likely to breed great heat between them. That the Parliament, after all this, is likely to give the kingdom no money, and therefore that it is to be wondered what makes the king give way to so great extravagances, which do all tend to the making him less than he is, and so will every day more and more. And by this means every creature is divided against the other, that there never was so great an uncertainty in England of what would be the event of things than at this day, nobody being at ease or safe. Being full of this discourse and glad of the rencontre, I to Whitehall and there got into the theatre room and there heard both the vocal and instrumental music, where the little fellow stood keeping time. But for my part I see no great matter but quite the contrary in both sorts of music. The composition, I believe, is very good, but no more of delightfulness to the ear or understanding but what is very ordinary. Here was the king and queen and some of the ladies, among whom none more jolly than my Lady Buckingham, her lord being once more a great man. Thence by coach home and to my office, ended my letters, and then home to supper, and my eyes being bad, to bed. The 17th of November. Lord's Day. Up and to church with my wife, a dull sermon of Mr. Mills, and then home without strangers to dinner, and then my wife to read, and then I to the office, enter my journal to this day, and so home, with great content that it is done, but with sorrow to my eyes. Then home, and got my wife to read to me out of Fuller's Church History, when by and by comes Captain Cock, who sat with me all the evening talking, and I find by him, as by all others, that we are like to expect great confusions, and most of our discourse was the same, and did agree with that the last night, and particularly that about the difference between the King and the Duke of York, which is like to be. He tells me that he hears that Sir William Coventry was, a little before the Duke of York fell sick, with the Duke of York in his closet, and fell on his knees and begged his pardon for what he hath done to my Lord Chancellor. But this I dare not soon believe. But he tells me another thing which he says he had from the person himself who spoke with the Duke of Buckingham, who, he says, is a very sober and worthy man, that he did lately speak with the Duke of Buckingham about his greatness now with the King, and told him, "But, sir, these things that the King doth now, in suffering the Parliament to do all this, you know are not fit for the King to suffer, and you know how often you have said to me that the King was a weak man, and unable to govern, but to be governed, and that you could command him as you listed. Why do you suffer him to go on in these things?" "Why," says the Duke of Buckingham, "I do suffer him to do this, that I may hereafter the better command him." This he swears to me, the person himself, to whom the Duke of Buckingham said this, did tell it him, and is a man of worth, understanding, and credit. He told me one odd passage by the Duke of Albemarle, speaking how hasty a man he is, and how for certain he would have killed Sir William Coventry, had he met him in a little time after his showing his letter in the house. He told me that a certain lady, whom he knows did tell him that she, being certainly informed that some of the Duke of Albemarle's family did say that the Earl of Torrington was a bastard, did think herself concerned to tell the Duke of Albemarle of it, and did first tell the Duchess, and was going to tell the old man when the Duchess pulled her back by the sleeve and hindered her, swearing to her that if he should hear it, he would certainly kill the servant that should be found to have said it, and therefore prayed her to hold her peace. One thing more he told me, which is that Garraway is come to town and is thinking how to bring the house to mind the public state of the nation, and to put off these particular picks against man and man, and that he propounding this to Sir William Coventry, Sir William Coventry did give no encouragement to it, which, he says, is that by their running after other men, he may escape. But I do believe this is not true neither. But, however, I am glad that Garraway is here, and that he doth begin to think of the public condition in reference to our neighbours that we are in, and in reference to ourselves, whereof I am mightily afeard of trouble. So to supper, and he gone, and we to bed. The 18th of November. up and all the morning at my office till 3 afternoon with Mr. Hayter about perfecting my little pocket market book of the office, till my eyes were ready to fall out of my head. And then home to dinner, glad that I had done so much, and so abroad to Whitehall to Commissioners of the Treasury, and there did a little business with them. And so home, leaving multitude of solicitors at their door, of one sort or other, complaining for want of such dispatch as they had in my Lord Treasurer's time, when I believe more business was dispatched. But it was in his manner, to the King's wrong. Among others, here was Gresham College coming about getting a grant of Chelsea College for their society, which the King, it seems, hath given them his right in. But they met with some other pretences, I think, to it, besides the King's. Thence took up my wife, whom I had left at her tailor's, and home, and there to save my eyes got my wife at home to read again, as last night in the same book, till William Battalier came and spent the evening talking with us, and supped with us, and so to bed. The 19th of November. To the office, and thence, before noon, I by the board's direction to the Parliament House, to speak with Sir Robert Brookes, about the meaning of an order come to us this day, to bring all the books of the office to the committee. I find by him that it is only about the business of an order of ours for paying off the ships by ticket, which they think I, on behalf of my Lord Brunker, do suppress, which vexes me, and more at its occasioning the bringing them our books. So home and to dinner, where Mr. Shepley with me, newly come out of the country. But I was at little liberty to talk to him, but after dinner, with 2 contracts to the committee with Lord Brunker and Sir Thomas Harvey, and there did deliver them, and promised at their command more, but much against my will. And here Sir Robert Brookes did take me alone and pray me to prevent their trouble, by discovering the order he would have. I told him I would suppress none, nor could, but this did not satisfy him, and so we parted. I vexed that I should bring on myself this suspicion. Here I did stand by unseen, and did hear their impertinent yet malicious examinations of some rogues, about the business of Bergen, wherein they would wind in something against my Lord Sandwich, it was plain by their manner of examining, as Sir Thomas Crewe did afterward observe to me who was there. But all amounted to little, I think. But here Sir Thomas Crewe and Will Hewer, who was there also, did tell me that they did hear Captain Downing give a cruel testimony against my Lord Brunker for his neglect, and doing nothing in the time of straits at Chatham when he was spoke to, and did tell the committee that he, Downing, did presently after in Lord Brunker's hearing tell the Duke of Albemarle that if he might advise the King, he should hang both my Lord Brunker and Pett. This is very hard. Thence, with Will Hewer and our messenger, Marlowe, home by coach, and so late at letters, and then home to supper, and my wife to read, and then to bed. This night I wrote to my father in answer to a new match which is proposed, the executor of Ensom, my sister's former servant, for my sister, that I will continue my mind of giving her £500 if he likes of the match. My father did also this week, by Shepley, return me up a guinea, which it seems, upon searching the ground, they have since found since I was there. I was told this day of Laurie Hyde, second son to my Lord Chancellor, did some time since in the House say that if he thought his father was guilty but of one of the things then said against him, he would be the first that should call for judgment against him, which Mr. Waller, the poet, did say was spoke like the old Roman, like Brutus, for its greatness and worthiness. The 20th of November. Up and all the morning at my office, shut up with Mr. Gibson, I walking and he reading to me the order books of the office from the beginning of the war, for preventing the Parliament's having them in their hands before I have looked them over, and seen the utmost that can be said against us from any of our orders. And to my great content, all the morning I found none. So, at noon, home to dinner with my clerks, who have of late dined frequently with me, and I do purpose to have them so still, by that means I having opportunity to talk with them about business, and I love their company very well. All the morning Mr. Hayter and the boy did shut up themselves at my house, doing something towards the finishing the abstract book of our contracts for my pocket, which I shall now want very much. After dinner, I stayed at home all the afternoon and Gibson with me, and he and I shut up till about 10 at night. We went through all our orders, and towards the end I do meet with two or three orders for our discharging of two or three little vessels by ticket without money, which doth plunge me. But, however, I have the advantage by this means to study an answer, and to prepare a defence, at least for myself. So, he gone, I to supper, my mind busy thinking after our defence in this matter, but with vexation to think that a thing of this kind, which in itself brings nothing but trouble and shame to us, should happen before all others to become a charge against us. This afternoon Mr. Mills came and visited me, and stayed a little with me, my wife being to be godmother to his child tomorrow. And among other talk, he told me how fully satisfactory my first report was to the house in the business of Chatham, which I am glad to hear, and the more for that I know that he is a great creature of Sir Robert Brooks. The 21st of November. Up and to the office, where all the morning, and at noon home, where my wife not very well, but is to go to Mr. Mills's child's christening, where she is godmother, Sir John Minnis and Sir Robert Brooks her companions. I left her after dinner, my clerks dining with me, to go with Sir John Minnis, and I to the office, where did much business till after candlelight, and then, my eyes beginning to fail me, I out and took coach into Arundel House, where the meeting of Gresham College was broke up, but there, meeting Creed, I with him to the tavern in St. Clement's Churchyard, where was Dean Wilkins, Dr. Whistler, Dr. Floyd, a divine, admitted, I perceive, this day, and other brave men. And there, among other things of news, I do hear that upon the reading of the House of Commons' reasons of the manner of their proceedings in the business of my Lord Chancellor, the reasons were so bad that my Lord Bristol himself did declare that he would not stand to what he had, and did still, advise the Lords to concur to, upon any of the reasons of the House of Commons. But if it was put to the question whether it should be done on their reasons, he would be against them. And indeed it seems the reasons, however they came to escape the House of Commons, which shows how slightly the greatest matters are done in this world, and even in parliaments, were none of them of strength, but the principle of them untrue. They saying that where any man is brought before a judge accused of treason in general, without specifying the particular, the judge doth there constantly, and is obliged to, commit him. Whereas the question being put by the Lords to my Lord Keeper, he said the quite contrary was true. And then, in the sixth article, I will get a copy of them if I can, there are two or three things strangely asserted, to the diminishing of the king's power, as is said, at least things that heretofore would not have been heard of. But then, the question being put among the Lords, as my Lord Bristol advised, whether upon the whole matter and reasons that had been laid before them, they would commit my Lord Clarendon, it was carried 5-1 against it, there being but three bishops against him, of which Cousins and Dr. Reynolds were two, and I know not the third. This made the opposite lords, as Bristol and Buckingham, so mad, that they declared and protested against it, speaking very broad that there was mutiny and rebellion in the heart of the lords, and that they desired they might enter their dissents, which they did do in great fury. So that upon the Lords sending to the Commons, as I am told, to have a conference for them to give their answer to the Commons' reasons, the Commons did desire a free conference, but the Lords do deny it. And the reason is that they hold not the Commons any court, but that themselves only are a court, and the chief court of judicature, and therefore are not to dispute the laws and method of their own court with them that are none, and so will not submit so much as to have their power disputed. And it is conceived that much of this eagerness among the Lords doth arise from the fear some of them have, that they may be dealt with in the same manner themselves, and therefore to stand upon it now. It seems my Lord Clarendon hath, as is said and believed, had his coach and horses, several times in his coach, ready to carry him to the Tower, expecting a message to that purpose, but by this means his case is like to be laid by. From this we fall to other discourse, and very good. Among the rest they discourse of a man that is a little frantic, that hath been a kind of minister, Dr. Wilkins, saying that he hath read for him in the church, that is poor and a debauched man, that the college have hired for 20 shillings to have some of the blood of a sheep let into his body. and it is to be done on Saturday next. They purpose to let in about 12 ounces, which they compute is what will be let in a minute's time by a watch. They differ in the opinion they have of the effects of it. Some think that it may have a good effect upon him as a frantic man by cooling his blood. Others that it will not have any effect at all. But the man is a healthy man, and by this means will be able to give an account what alteration, if any, he doth find in himself, and so may be useful. On this occasion Dr. Whistler told a pretty story related by Muffet, a good author, of Dr. Keyes that built Keyes College, that being very old, and lived only at that time upon woman's milk, he, while he fed upon the milk of an angry, fretful woman, was so himself, and then being advised to take of a good-natured, patient woman, he did become so, beyond the common temper of his age. Thus much nutriment, they observed, might do. Their discourse was very fine, and if I should be put out of my office, I do take great content in the liberty I shall be at of frequenting these gentlemen's companies. Broke up thence and home, and there to my wife in her chamber, who is not well of those, and there she tells me great stories of the gossiping women of the parish, what this and what that woman was, and among the rest how Mistress Holworthy is the veriest confident, bragging gossip of them all, which I should not have believed, but that Sir Robert Brooks, her partner, was mighty civil to her, and taken with her, and what not. My eyes being bad, I spent the evening with her in her chamber, talking and inventing a cipher to put on a piece of plate, which I must give, better than ordinary, to the parson's child. And so to bed, and through my wife's illness had a bad night of it, and she a worse, poor wretch. The 22nd of November. Up betimes, and drinking my morning draught of strong water with Betty Mitchell, but had not opportunity para bizarla, I by water to Whitehall, and there met Creed, and thence with him to Westminster Hall, where we talked long together of news, and there met with Cooling, my Lord Chamberlain's secretary, and from him learn the truth of all I heard last night, and understand further that this stiffness of the Lord's is in no manner of kindness to my Lord Chancellor, for he neither hath, nor doth, nor for the future likely can, oblige any of them, but rather the contrary, but that they do fear what the consequence may be to themselves should they yield in his case, as many of them have reason. And more, he showed me how this is rather to the wrong and prejudice of my Lord Chancellor, for that it is better for him to come to be tried before the Lords, where he can have right and make interest, than, when the Parliament is up, be committed by the King and tried by a court on purpose, made by the King of what Lords the King pleases, who have a mind to have his head. So that my Lord Cornbury himself, his son, he tells me, hath moved that if they have treason against my Lord of Clarendon, that they would specify it and send it up to the Lords, that he might come to his trial. So full of intrigues this business is. Having now a mind to go on and to be rid of Creed, I could not, but was forced to carry him with me to the excise office, and thence to the Temple, and there walked a good while in the Temple Church, observing the plainness of Selden's tomb, and how much better one of his executors hath who is buried by him. And there I parted with him, and took coach and home, where to dinner. The 23rd of November. Up and to the office, where all the morning and at noon home to dinner, and all the afternoon also, busy till late, preparing things to fortify myself and fellows against the Parliament, and particularly myself against what I fear is thought, that I have suppressed the order of the board by which the discharging the great ships off at Chatham by ticket was directed, whereas, indeed, there was no such order. So home at night to supper, and to bed. The 24th of November. Lord's Day. In my chamber all the morning, having lain long in bed, till Mr. Shepley came to dine with me, and there, being to return to Hinchingbrook speedily, I did give him as good account how matters go here as I could. After dinner, he being gone, I to the office, and there, for want of other of my clerks, sent to Mr. Gibbs, whom I never used till now, for the writing over of my little pocket contract book, and there I laboured till 9 at night with him in drawing up the history of all that had passed concerning tickets, in order to the laying the whole and clearing myself and office before Sir Robert Brookes. And in this I took great pains, and then sent him away and proceeded, and had Will Hewers come to me, and he and I till past 12 at night in the office, and he, which was a good service, did so inform me in the consequences of my writing this report, and that what I said would not hold water in denying this board to have ever ordered the discharging out of the service whole ships by ticket, that I did alter my whole counsel, and fall to arm myself with good reasons to justify the office in so doing, which hath been but rare, and having done this, I went with great quiet in my mind home, though vexed that so honest a business should bring me so much trouble, but mightily was pleased to find myself put out of my former design, and so, after supper, to bed. The 25th of November. Up and all the morning at the office, finishing my letter to Sir Robert Brookes, which I did with great content. And yet, at noon, when I came home to dinner, I read it over again after it was sealed and delivered to the messenger, and read it to my clerks who dined with me, and there I did resolve upon some alteration, and caused it to be new writ. And so to the office after dinner, and there all the afternoon mighty busy. And at night did take coach, thinking to have gone to Westminster, but it was mighty dark and foul, and my business not great, only to keep my eyes from reading by candle, being weary. But being gone part of my way, I turned back, and so home and there to read, and my wife to read to me out of Sir Robert Cotton's book about war, which is very fine, showing how the kings of England have raised money heretofore upon the people, and how they have played upon the kings also. So, after supper, I to bed. This morning Sir William Penn tells me that the House was very hot on Saturday last, upon the business of liberty of speech in the House, and damned the vote in the beginning of the Long Parliament against it, so that he fears that there may be some bad thing which they have a mind to broach, which they dare not do without more security than they now have. God keep us, for things look mighty ill. The 26th of November. Up all the morning at the office, and then home to dinner, where dined Mr. Clark, solicitor, with me, to discourse about my Tangier accounts, which I would fain make up, but I have no time. After dinner, by coach as far as the Temple, and there saw a new book in folio of all that suffered for the king in the late times, which I will buy, it seems well writ. And then back to the old exchange, and there at my goldsmith's bought a basin for my wife to give the parson's child, to which the other day she was godmother. It cost me £10.14, besides graving, which I do with the cipher of the name, Daniel Mills. And so home to the office, and then home to supper, and hear my wife read, and then to bed. This noon, after dinner, came to me Mr. Warren, and there did tell me that he came to pay his debt to me for the kindness I did him in getting his last ship out, which I must also remember was a service to the king, though I did not tell him so, as appeared by my advising with the board, and their writing to Sir William Coventry, to get the pass for the ship to go for it to Genoa. Now that with which he had promised me for the courtesy was, I take it, 100 pieces or more, I think more, and also for the former courtesy I had done, for the getting his first ship out for this hemp, he did promise me a consideration upon the return of the goods, but I never did to this day demand anything of him, only about a month ago he told me that now his ship was come, and he would come out of my debt, but told me that whereas he did expect to have had some profit by the voyage, it had proved of loss to him, by the loss of some ships or some accidents, I know not what, and so that he was not able to do what he intended, but told me that he would present me with 60 pieces in gold. I told him I would demand nothing of his promises, though they were much greater, nor would have thus much. But if he could afford to give me but 50 pieces, it should suffice me. So now he brought something in a paper, which since proved to be 50 pieces. But before I would take them, I told him that I did not insist on anything, and therefore prayed him to consult his ability before he did part with them. And so I refused them once or twice, till he did the third time offer them, and then I took them. He saying that he would present me with as many more, if I would undertake to get him £500 paid on his bills. I told him I would by no means have any promise of that kind, nor would have any kindness from him for any such service, but that I should do my utmost for nothing to do him that justice, and would endeavour to do what I could for him. And so we parted, he owning himself mightily engaged to me for my kind usage of him in accepting so small a matter in satisfaction for all that he owed me. And so we parted. Which I enter at large for my justification, if anything of this should be hereafter inquired after. This evening also came to me, to my closet at the office, Sir John Chichley, of his own accord, to tell me what he shall answer to the committee, when, as he expects, he shall be examined about my Lord Sandwich, which is so little as will not hurt my Lord at all, I know. He doth profess great generousness towards my Lord, and that his jealousy of my Lord's of him is without ground, but doth mightily inveigh against Sir Roger Cuttance, and would never have my Lord to carry him to sea again with him, as being a man that hath done my Lord more hurt than ever he can repair, by his ill advice and disobliging everybody. He will by no means seem to crouch to my Lord, but says that he hath as good blood in his veins as any man, though not so good a title, but that he will do nothing to wrong or prejudice my Lord, and I hope he will not, nor believe can. But he tells me that Sir Edward Spragg and Utber are the men that have done my Lord the most wrong, and did bespatter him the most at Oxford, and that my Lord was misled to believe that all that was there said was his, when indeed it was they, and says that he did at that time complain to his father of this his misfortune. This, I confess, is strange to me, touching those two men, but yet it may well enough as the world goes. Though, I wonder, I confess, at the latter of the two, who always professes great love to my Lord. Sir Roger Cuttance was with me in the morning, and there gives me an account so clear about Bergen and the other business against my Lord, as I do not see what can be laid to my Lord in either, and tells me that Penn, however he now dissembles it, did on the quarter-deck of my Lord's ship after he came on board, when my Lord did fire a gun for the ships to leave pursuing the enemy, Penn did say before a great many, several times, that his heart did leap in his belly for joy when he heard the gun, and that it was the best thing that could be done for securing the fleet. He tells me also that Penn was the first that did move and persuade my Lord to the breaking bulk, as a thing that was now the time to do right to the commanders of the great ships, who had no opportunity of getting anything by prizes. Now his lordship might distribute to everyone something, and he himself did write down before my Lord the proportions for each man. This I am glad of, though it may be this dissembling fellow may 20-1 deny it. The 27th of November. Up and all the morning at my Lord Brunker's lodgings with Sir John Minnis and William Penn about Sir William Warren's accounts, wherein I do not see that they are ever very likely to come to an understanding of them, as Sir John Minnis hath yet handled them. Here till noon, and then home to dinner, where Mr. Pierce comes to me, and there in general tells me how the King is now fallen in and become a slave to the Duke of Buckingham, led by none but him, whom he, Mr. Pierce, swears he knows to hate the very person of the King, and would as well as live certainly ruin him. He doth say, and I think with right, that the King doth in this do the most ungrateful part of a master to a servant that ever was done, in this carriage of his to my Lord Chancellor. That it may be the Chancellor may have faults, but none such as these they speak of. That he doth now really fear that all is going to ruin, for he says he hears that Sir William Coventry hath been, just before his sickness, with the Duke of York to ask his forgiveness and peace for what he had done, for that he never could foresee that what he meant so well in, the counselling to lay by the Chancellor, should come to this. As soon as dined, I with my boy Tom to my bookbinder's, where all the afternoon long till 8 or 9 at night, seeing him binding up 2 or 3 collections of letters and papers that I had of him, but above all things my little abstract pocket-book of contracts, which he will do very neatly. Then home to read, sup, and to bed. The 28th of November. Up and at the office all this morning, and then home to dinner, and then by coach sent my wife to the King's Playhouse, and I to Whitehall, there intending, with Lord Brunker, Sir John Minnis, and Sir Thomas Harvey, to have seen the Duke of York, whom, it seems, the King and Queen have visited, and so we may now well go to see him. But there was nobody could speak with him, and so we parted, leaving a note in Mr. Wren's chamber that we had been there, he being at the free conference of the two houses about this great business of my Lord Chancellor's, at which they were at this hour, 3 in the afternoon. And there, they say, my Lord Anglesey doth his part admirably, and each of us taking a printed copy of the Guinea Company's defence to a petition against them to the Parliament the other day. So I away to the King's Playhouse, and there sat by my wife and saw The Mistaken Beauty, which I never, I think, saw before, though an old play, and there is much in it that I like, though the name is but improper to it, at least that name, it being also called The Liar, which is proper enough. Here I met with Sir Richard Brown, who wondered to find me there, telling me that I am a man of so much business, which character, I thank God, I have ever got, and have for a long time had and deserved, and yet am now come to be censured in common with the office for a man of negligence. Thence home, and to the office to my letters, and then home to supper and to bed. The 29th of November. Waked about 7 o'clock this morning with a noise I supposed I heard near our chamber, of knocking which by and by increased, and I, more awake, could distinguish it better. I then waked my wife, and both of us wondered at it, and lay so a great while that increased, and at last heard it plainer, knocking as if it were breaking down a window for people to get out, and then removing of stools and chairs, and plainly by and by going up and down our stairs. We lay both of us afeard, yet I would have rose, but my wife would not let me. Besides, I could not do it without making noise, and we did both conclude that thieves were in the house, but wondered what our people did, whom we thought either killed or afeared, as we were. Thus we lay till the clock struck 8, and high day. At last I removed my gown and slippers safely to the other side the bed over my wife, and there safely rose and put on my gown and breeches, and then with a firebrand in my hand safely opened the door, and saw nor heard anything. Then, with fear, I confess, went to the maid's chamber door, and all quiet and safe. Called Jane up, and went down safely, and opened my chamber, where all well. Then more freely about, and to the kitchen, where the cook made up, and all safe. So up again, and when Jane came, and we demanded whether she heard no noise, she said, yes, and was afeard, but rose with the other maid, and found nothing, but heard a noise in the great stack of chimneys, that goes from Sir John Minnis's through our house. And so we sent, and their chimneys have been swept this morning, and the noise was that, and nothing else. It is one of the most extraordinary accidents in my life, and gives ground to think of Don Quixote's adventures, how people may be surprised. And the more from an accident last night, that our young gibcat did leap down our stairs from top to bottom at 2 leaps, and frighted us, that we could not tell well whether it was the cat or a spirit, and do sometimes think this morning that the house might be haunted. Glad to have this so well over, and indeed really glad in my mind, for I was much afeard. I dressed myself and to the office both forenoon and afternoon, mighty hard putting papers and things in order to my extraordinary satisfaction, and consulting my clerks in many things, who are infinite helps to my memory and reasons of things. And so, being weary and my eyes aching, having overwrought them today reading so much shorthand, I home, and there to supper, it being late, and to bed. This morning Sir William Penn and I did walk together a good while, and he tells me that the houses are not likely to agree after their free conference yesterday, and he fears what may follow. The 30th of November. Up and to the office where all the morning, and then by coach to Arundel House, to the elections of officers for the next year, where I was near being chosen of the council, but am glad I was not, for I could not have attended, though, above all things, I could wish it, and do take it as a mighty respect to have been named there. The company great, and elections long, and then to Carey House, a house now of entertainment next my Lord Ashley's, and there, where I have heretofore heard common prayer in the time of Dr. Mossam, We, after 2 hours' stay, sitting at the table with our napkins open, had our dinners brought, but badly done. But here was good company, I choosing to sit next Dr. Wilkins, Sir George Ent, and others whom I value, and there talked of several things, among others Dr. Wilkins, talking of the universal speech, of which he hath a book coming out, did first inform me how man was certainly made for society, he being of all creatures the least armed for defence. And, of all creatures in the world, the young ones are not able to do anything to help themselves, nor can find the dug without being put to it, but would die if the mother did not help it. And he says, were it not for speech, man would be a very mean creature. Much of this good discourse we had, but here, above all, I was pleased to see the person who had his blood taken out. He speaks well, and did this day give the society a relation thereof in Latin, saying that he finds himself much better since, and as a new man. But he is cracked a little in his head, though he speaks very reasonably and very well. He had but 20 shillings for his suffering it, and is to have the same again tried upon him, the first sound man that ever had it tried on him in England, and but one that we hear of in France, which was a porter hired by the virtuosi. Here all the afternoon till within night. Then I took coach and to the Exchange, where I was to meet my wife, but she was gone home, and so I to Westminster Hall, and there took a turn or two, but meeting nobody to discourse with, returned to Carey House, and there stayed a little, and saw a pretty deception of the sight, by glass with water poured into it, with a stick standing up with 3 balls of wax upon it, one distant from the other. How these balls did seem double, and disappear one after another, mighty pretty. Here Mr. Carcass did come to me, and brought first Mr. Colwall, our treasurer, and then Dr. Wilkins to engage me to be his friend, and himself asking forgiveness and desiring my friendship, saying that the council have now ordered him to be free to return to the office to be employed. I promised him my friendship, and am glad of this occasion, having desired it, for there is nobody's ill tongue that I fear like his, being a malicious and cunning bold fellow. Thence, paying our shot, 6 shillings apiece, I home and there to the office and wrote my letters, and then home, my eyes very sore with yesterday's work. And so home, and try to make a peace by my ear and vial to, I wonder what the grave, etc., and so to supper and to bed, where frighted a good while, and my wife again, with noises. And my wife did rise twice, but I think it was Sir John Minnis's people again, late cleaning their house, for it was past 1 o'clock in the morning before we could fall to sleep, and so slept. But I perceive well what the care of money and treasure in a man's house is to a man that fears to lose it. My Lord Anglesey told me this day that he did believe the House of Commons would the next week yield to the Lords, but speaking with others this day, they conclude they will not, but that rather the King will accommodate it by committing my Lord Clarendon himself. I remember what Mr. Evelyn said, that he did believe we should soon see ourselves fall into a commonwealth again. Joseph Williamson I find mighty kind still, but close, not daring to say anything almost that touches upon news or state of affairs. December 1667. The first, Lord's Day. I up, and after entering my journal for 2 or 3 days, I to church, where Mr. Mills, a dull sermon. And in our pew there sat a great lady, which I afterward understood to be my Lady Carlisle, that made her husband a cuckold in Scotland. A very fine woman indeed in person. After sermon, home, where Will Hewer dined with us, and after dinner he and I all the afternoon to read over our office letters, to see what matter can be got for our advantage or disadvantage therein. In the evening comes Mr. Pelling, and the 2 men that were with him formerly, the little man that sings so good a bass, Wallington, and another that understands well, one Piggott, and Betty Turner came and sat and supped with us, and we spent the evening mighty well in good music, to my great content to see myself in condition to have these, and entertain them for my own pleasure only. So they gone, we to bed. The 2nd of December. Up and then abroad to Alderman Backwell's, who was sick of a cold in bed, and then to the excise office, where I find Mr. Ball out of humour, in expectation of being put out of his office by the change of the farm of the excise. There comes Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, and he and I to Westminster, and there walked up and down till noon, where all the business is that the Lord's answer is come down to the Commons, that they are not satisfied in the Commons' reasons, and so the Commons are hot and like to sit all day upon the business what to do herein, most thinking that they will remonstrate against the Lord's. Thence to Lord Crewe's, and there dined with him, where after dinner he took me aside and bewailed the condition of the nation, how the King and his brother are at a distance about this business of the Chancellor and the Houses differing. And he doth believe that there are so many about the King like to be concerned and troubled by the Parliament, that they will get him to dissolve or prorogue the Parliament, and the rather for that the King is likely, by the good husbandry of the Treasury, to get out of debt, and the Parliament is likely to give no money. Among other things, my Lord Crewe did tell me, with grief, that he hears that the King of late hath not dined nor supped with the Queen as he used of late to do. After a little discourse, Mr. Caesar dining there, he did give us some music on his lute, Mr. John Crewe being there, to my great content, and then away I, and Mr. Caesar followed me and told me that my boy Tom hath this day declared to him that he cared not for the French lute, and would learn no more, which Caesar, out of faithfulness, tells me that I might not spend any more money on him in vain. I shall take the boy to task about it, though I am contented to save my money if the boy knows not what is good for himself. So thanked him, and indeed he is a very honest man, I believe, and away home, there to get something ready for the Lord's Commissioners of Treasury, and so took my wife and girl and set them at Unthanks, and I to Whitehall, and there with the Commissioners of the Treasury, who I find in mighty good condition to go on in payment of the seamen off. And thence I to Westminster Hall, where I met with my cousin Roger, and walked a good while with him. He tells me of the high vote of the Commons this afternoon, which I also heard was mighty hot at Whitehall, that the proceedings of the Lords in the case of my Lord Clarendon is an obstruction to justice and of ill precedent to future times. This makes everybody wonder what will be the effect of it, most thinking that the King will try him by his own commission. It seems they were mighty high to have remonstrated, but some said that was too great an appeal to the people. Roger is mighty full of fears of the consequence of it, and wishes the King would dissolve them. So we parted, and I bought some Scotch cakes at Wilkinson's in King Street, and called my wife, and home, and there to supper, talk, and to bed. Supped upon these cakes, of which I've ate none since we lived at Westminster. This night our poor little dog Fancy was in a strange fit of madness through age, of which she hath had 5 or 6. The 3rd of December. Up by candlelight, the only time I think I've done so this winter, and a coach being got overnight, I to Sir William Coventry, the first time I've seen him at his new house since he came to lodge there. He tells of the vote for none of the house to be of the commission for the bill of accounts, which, he thinks, is so great a disappointment to Birch and others that expected to be of it, that he thinks, could it have been seen, there would not have been any bill at all. We hope it will be the better for all that are to account, it being likely that the men, being few and not of the house, will hear reason. The main business I went about was about Gilsthrop, Sir William Batten's clerk, who, being upon his deathbed, and now dead, hath offered to make discovery of the disorder of the navy, and of £65,000 damage to the King, which made mighty noise in the Commons House, and members appointed to go to him, which they did, but nothing to the purpose got from him, but complaints of false musters, and ships being refitted with victuals and stores at Plymouth after they came fitted from other ports. But all this to no purpose, nor more than we know and will own, but the best is that this loggerhead should say this that understands nothing of the navy, nor ever would, and hath particularly blemished his master by name among us. I told Sir William Coventry of my letter to Sir Robert Brooke, and his answer to me. He advises me, in what I write to him, to be as short as I can and obscure, saving in things fully plain, for that all he doth is to make mischief, and that the greatest wisdom in dealing with the Parliament in the world is to say little, and let them get out what they can by force, which I shall observe. he declared to me much of his mind. To be ruled by his own measures and not to go so far as many would have him, to the ruin of my Lord Chancellor, and for which they do endeavour to do what they can against William Coventry. But, says he, I have done my due in helping to get him out of the administration of things for which he is not fit, but for his life or estate I will have nothing to say to it, besides that my duty to my master, the Duke of York, is such that I will perish before I will do anything to displease or disoblige him, where the very necessity of the kingdom doth not in my judgment call me. Thence I home, and to the office where Lord Anglesey, and all the discourse was yesterday's vote in the Commons, wherein he told us that should the Lords yield to what the Commons would have in this matter, it were to make them worse than any justice of peace, whereas they are the highest court in the kingdom, that they cannot be judges whether an offender be to be committed or bailed, which every justice of peace doth do, and then he showed me precedents plain in their defence. At noon, home to dinner, and busy all the afternoon. And at night, home, and there met William Batalier, who tells me the first great news, that my Lord Chancellor is fled this day. By and by to Sir William Penn's, where Sir Richard Ford and he and I met with Mr. Young and Lewis about our accounts with my Lady Batten, which proved troublesome and I doubt will prove to our loss. But here I hear the whole that my Lord Chancellor is gone and left a paper behind him for the House of Lords, telling them the reason of his retiring, complaining of a design for his ruin. But the paper I must get, only the thing at present is great and will put the King and Commons to some new counsels, certainly. So home to supper and to bed. Sir William Penn I find in much trouble this evening, having been called to the committee this afternoon about the business of prizes. Sir Richard Ford told us this evening an odd story of the baseness of the late Lord Mayor, Sir William Bolton, in cheating the poor of the city, out of the collections made for the people that were burned, of £1,800, of which he can give no account, and in which he hath forsworn himself plainly, so as the Court of Aldermen have sequestered him from their court, till he doth bring in an account, which is the greatest piece of roguery that they say was ever found in a Lord Mayor. He says also that this day it hath been made appear to them that the Keeper of Newgate at this day hath made his house the only nursery of rogues and whores and pickpockets and thieves in the world, where they were bred and entertained, and the whole society met, and that for the sake of the sheriffs they durst not this day commit him, for fear of making him let out the prisoners, but are fain to go by artifice to deal with him. He tells me also, speaking of the new street that is to be made from Guildhall down to Cheapside, that the ground is already most of it bought, and tells me of one particular, of a man that hath a piece of ground lie in the very middle of the street that must be, which, when the street is cut out of it, there will remain ground enough of each side to build a house to front the street. He demanded £700 for the ground, and to be excused paying anything for the melioration of the rest of his ground that he was to keep. The court consented to give him £700, only not to abate him the consideration, which the man denied, but told them, and so they agreed, that he would excuse the city the £700, that he might have the benefit of the melioration without paying anything for it. So much some will get by having the city burnt. But he told me that in other cases, ground by this means, that was not worth fourpence a foot before, will now, when houses are built, be worth 15 shillings a foot. But he tells me that the common standard now reckoned on between man and man, in places where there is no alteration of circumstances, but only the houses burnt, there the ground, which with a house on it did yield £100 a year, is now reputed worth £33.6.8, and that this is the common market price between one man and another, made upon a good and moderate medium. The 4th of December. At the office all the morning, at noon to dinner, and presently with my wife abroad, whom, and her girl, I leave at unthanks. And so to Whitehall in expectation of waiting on the Duke of York today, but were prevented therein. Only at Mr. Wren's chamber there, I hear that the House of Lords did send down the paper which my Lord Clarendon left behind him, directed to the Lords, to be seditious and scandalous. And the Commons have voted that it be burnt by the hands of the hangman, and that the Lords be desired to agree to it. I do hear also that they have desired the King to use means to stop his escape out of the nation. Here I also heard Mr. Jermyn, who was there in the chamber upon occasion of Sir Thomas Harvey's telling him of his brother's having a child, and thereby taking away his hopes, that is, Mr. Jermyn's, of £2,000 a year. He swore, God damn him, he did not desire to have any more wealth than he had in the world, which indeed is a great estate, having all his uncles, my Lord St. Albans, and my Lord hath all the Queen Mother's. But when Sir Thomas Harvey told him, "But hereafter you will wish it more," "By God," answers he, "I won't promise what I shall do hereafter." Thence into the house, and there spied a pretty woman with spots on her face, well clad, who was inquiring for the guard chamber. I followed her, and there she went up and turned into the turning towards the chapel, and I after her. And upon the stairs there met her coming up again, and there kissed her twice. And her business was to inquire for Sir Richard Bishop, one of the sergeants at arms. I believe she was a woman of pleasure, but was shy enough to me, and so I saw her go out afterward, and take a hackney coach, and away. I to Westminster Hall, and there walked, and thence towards Whitehall by coach, and spying Mistress Burrows in a shop, did stop and light and speak to her. And so to Whitehall, where I light, and went and met her coming towards Whitehall, but she was upon business, and I could not get her to go any whither. And so parted, and I home with my wife and girl. My wife not being very well of a great looseness day and night for these 2 days. So home and my wife to read to me in Sir Robert Cotton's Book of War, which is excellent reading, and particularly I was mightily pleased this night in what we read about the little profit or honour this kingdom ever gained in its greatest of its conquests abroad in France. This evening came Mr. Mills and sat with us a while, who is mighty kind and good company. And so he gone, I to supper and to bed. My wife an unquiet night. This day Gilsthrop is buried, who hath made all the late discourse of the great discovery of £65,000 of which the king hath been wronged. The 5th of December. At the office all the morning, do hear that Will Penn, Sir William Penn's son, is come from Ireland, but I have not seen him yet. At noon to the change, where did little, but so home again and to dinner with my clerks with me, and very good discourse and company they give me, and so to the office all the afternoon till late, and so home to supper and to bed. This day, not for want, but for good husbandry, I sent my father by his desire 6 pair of my old shoes, which fit him and are good, yet methought it was a thing against my mind to have him wear my old things. The 6th of December. Up and with Sir John Minnis to the Duke of York, the first time that I've seen, or we waited on him, since his sickness. And blessed be God, he is not at all the worse for the smallpox, but is only a little weak yet. We did much business with him, and so parted. My Lord Anglesey told me how my Lord Northampton brought in a bill into the House of Lords yesterday, under the name of A Bill for the Honour and Privilege of the House, and Mercy to my Lord Clarendon, which he told me he opposed, saying that he was a man accused of treason by the House of Commons, and mercy was not proper for him, having not been tried yet, and so no mercy needful for him. However, the Duke of Buckingham did, and others, desire the bill might be read, and it was for banishing my Lord Clarendon from all His Majesty's dominions, and that it should be treason to have him found in any of them. The thing is only a thing of vanity, and to insult over him, which is mighty poor, I think, and so doth everybody else, and ended in nothing, I think. By and by home with Sir John Minnis, who tells me that my Lord Clarendon did go away in a custom-house boat, and is now at Calais, upon whom, I confess, nothing seems to hang more heavy than his leaving of this unfortunate paper behind him, that hath angered both houses, and hath, I think, reconciled them in that which otherwise would have broke them in pieces, so that I do, hence, and from Sir William Coventry's late example and doctrine to me, learn that on these sorts of occasions there is nothing like silence, it being seldom any wrong to a man to say nothing, but for the most part it is to say anything. This day, in coming home, Sir John Minnis told me a pretty story of Sir Lewis Dives, whom I saw this morning speaking with him, that having escaped once out of prison through a house of office, and another time in woman's apparel, and leaping over a broad canal, a soldier, in roguery, put his hand towards her belly and swore, says he, "This is a strong jade, but I never felt a cunt with a handle to it before." He told me also a story of my Lord Cottington, who, wanting a son, intended to make his nephew his heir, a country boy, but did alter his mind upon the boy's being persuaded by another young heir, in roguery, to crow like a cock at my lord's table, much company being there, and the boy having a great trick at doing that perfectly. My lord bade them take away that fool from the table, and so gave over the thoughts of making him his heir from this piece of folly. So home, and there to dinner, and after dinner abroad with wife and girl set them down at Unthanks, and I to Whitehall to the council chamber, where I was summoned about the business of paying off the seamen, where I heard my Lord Anglesey put to it by Sir William Coventry before the king for altering the course set by the council, which he, like a very wise man, did answer in few words that he had already sent to alter it according to the council's method, and so stopped it. Whereas many words would have set the commissioners of the Treasury on fire, who I perceive were prepared for it. Here I heard Mr. Gordon speak to the King and Council upon some business of his before them, but did it so well in so good words and to the purpose, that I could never have expected from a man of no greater learning. So went away, and in the lobby met Mr. Sawyer, my old chamberfellow, and stayed and had an hour's discourse of old things with him, and I perceive he doth very well in the world, and is married, he tells me, and hath a child. Then home, and to the office, where Captain Cock came to me, and among other discourse tells me that he is told that an impeachment against Sir William Coventry will be brought in very soon. He tells me that even those that are against my Lord Chancellor and the court in the House do not trust nor agree one with another. He tells me that my Lord Chancellor went away about 10 at night on Saturday last, and took boat at Westminster, and thence by a vessel to Calais, where he believes he now is, and that the Duke of York and Mr. Wren knew of it, and that himself did know of it on Sunday morning, that on Sunday his coach and people about it went to Twickenham, and the world thought that he had been there, that nothing but this unhappy paper hath undone him, and that he doubts that this paper hath lost him everywhere, that his withdrawing doth reconcile things so far as he thinks the heat of their fury will be over, and that all will be made well between the two brothers. That Holland doth endeavour to persuade the King of France to break peace with us, that the Dutch will without doubt have 60 sail of ships out the next year, so knows not what will become of us, but hopes that the Parliament will find money for us to have a fleet. He gone, I home, and there my wife made an end to me of Sir Robert Cotton's discourse of war, which is indeed a very fine book. So to supper and to bed. Captain Cock did this night tell me also, among other discourse, that he did believe that there are jealousies in some of the House at this day against the commissioners of the Treasury, that by their good husbandry they will bring the King to be out of debt and to save money, and so will not be in need of the Parliament, and then do what he please, which is a very good piece of news that there is such a thing to be hoped which they would be afeared of. The 7th of December. All the morning at the office, and at noon home to dinner with my clerks, and while we're at dinner comes Willett's aunt to see her and my wife. She is a very fine widow and pretty handsome, but extraordinary well-carriaged, and speaks very handsomely and with extraordinary understanding, so as I spent the whole afternoon in her company with my wife, she understanding all the things of note, touching plays and fashions and court and everything, and speaks rarely, which pleases me mightily, and seems to love her niece very well, and was so glad, which was pretty odd, to see that since she came hither her breasts begin to swell, she being afeard before that she would have none, which was a pretty kind of content she gave herself. She tells us that Catiline is likely to be soon acted, which I am glad to hear, but it is at the king's house. But the king's house is at present, and hath for some days been silenced upon some difference between heart and moon. She being gone, I to the office, and there late doing business, and so home to supper and to bed. Only this evening I must remember that my Lady Batten sent for me, and it was to speak to me before her overseers about my bargain with Sir William Batten about the prize, to which I would give no present answer, but am well enough contented that they begin the discourse of it, and so away to the office again, and then home to supper and to bed. Somebody told me this day that they hear that Thompson, with the wooden leg, and Wildman, the fifth monarchy man, a great creature of the Duke of Buckingham's, are in nomination to be commissioners, among other, upon the bill of accounts. The 8th of December, Lord's Day. All the morning at my chamber, doing something toward the settling of my papers and accounts, which have been out of order a great while. At noon to dinner, where Will Howe with us, and after dinner, he being gone, I to my chamber again till almost night, and then took boat, the tide serving, and so to Whitehall, where I saw the Duchess of York, in a fine dress of second mourning for her mother, being black, edged with ermine, go to make her first visit to the Queen since the Duke of York was sick. And by, she being returned, the Queen came and visited her. But it was pretty to observe that Sir William Coventry and I, walking an hour and more together in the matted gallery, he observed, and so did I, how the Duchess, as soon as she spied him, turned her head a one side. Here he and I walked thus long, which we have not done a great while before. Our discourse was upon everything. The unhappiness of having our matters examined by people that understand them not, that it was better for us in the navy to have men that do understand the whole, and that are not passionate, that we that have taken the most pains are called upon to answer for all crimes, while those that like Sir William Batten and Sir John Minnis did sit and do nothing, do lie still without any trouble, that if it were to serve the king and kingdom again in a war, neither of us could do more, though upon this experience we might do better than we did. That the commanders, the gentlemen that could never be brought to order, but undid all, are now the men that find fault and accuse others. That it had been much better for the king to have given Sir John Minnis and William Batten £1,000 a year to have sat still, than to have had them in his business this war. That the serving a prince that minds not his business is most unhappy for them that serve him well, and a unhappiness so great that he declares he will never have more to do with a war under him. That he hath papers which do flatly contradict the Duke of Albemarle's narrative, and that he hath been with the Duke of Albemarle and showed him them to prevent his falling into another like fault. That the Duke of Albemarle seems to be able to answer them, but he thinks that the Duke of Albemarle and the Prince are contented to let their narratives sleep, they being not only contradictory in some things, as he observed about the business of the Duke of Albemarle's being to follow the Prince upon the dividing the fleet in case the enemy came out, but neither of them to be maintained in others. That the business the other night of my Lord Anglesey at the Council was happily got over for my Lord by his dexterous silencing it, and the rest not urging it further, for as much as had the Duke of Buckingham come in time enough, and had got it by the end, he would have tossed him in it. Sir William Coventry telling me that my Lord Anglesey did with such impudence maintain that quarrel against the Commons and some of the Lords in the business of my Lord Clarendon, that he believes there are enough would be glad but of this occasion to be revenged of him. He tells me that he hears some of the Thompsons are like to be of the Commission for the Accounts, and Wildman, which he much wonders at, as having been a false fellow to everybody, and in prison most of the time since the king's coming in. But he doth tell me that the house is in such a condition that nobody can tell what to make of them, and he thinks they were never in before. That everybody leads and nobody follows, and that he doth now think that since a great many are defeated in their expectation of being of the commission, now they would put it into such hands as it shall get no credit from, for if they do look to the bottom and see the king's case, they think they are then bound to give the king money, whereas they would be excused from that, and therefore will endeavour to make this business of the accounts to signify little. I spoke with him about my Lord Sandwich's business, in which he is very friendly, and doth say that the unhappy business of the prizes is it that hath brought all this trouble upon him, and the only thing that made anything else mentioned. And it is true. So having discoursed with him, I spent some time with Sir Stephen Fox about the business of our adjusting the new method of the excise between the guards, household, and Tangier, the Lords Commissioners of the Treasury being now resolved to bring all their management into a course of payment by orders and not by tallies, and I'm glad of it. And so, by water home, late and very dark, and when come home there, I got my wife to read, and then came Captain Cock to me, and there he tells me, to my great satisfaction, that Sir Robert Brooks did dine with him today, and that he told him, speaking of me, that he would make me the darling of the House of Commons. So much he is satisfied concerning me. And this Cock did tell me that I might give him thanks for it, and I do think it may do me good, for he doth happen to be held a considerable person of a young man, both for sobriety and ability. Then to discourse of business of his own about some hemp of his that is come home, to receive it into the king's stores, and then parted, and by and by my wife and I to supper, she not being well, her flux being great upon her, and so to bed. The 9th of December. All the morning busy at the office doing very considerable business, and thither comes Sir George Carteret to talk with me, who seems to think himself safe as to his particular, but doth doubt what will become of the whole kingdom, things being so broke in pieces. He tells me that the king himself did the other day very particularly tell the whole story of my Lord Sandwich's not following the Dutch ships, with which he is charged, and shows the reasons of it to be the only good course he could have taken, and doth discourse it very knowingly. This I am glad of, though as the king is now, his favour, for aught I see, serves very little instead at this day, but rather is an argument against a man, and the king doth not concern himself to relieve or justify anybody, but is wholly negligent of everybody's concernment. This morning I was troubled with my Lord Hinchingbroke sending to borrow £200 of me, but I did answer that I had none, nor could borrow any, for I am resolved I will not be undone for anybody, though I would do much for my Lord Sandwich, for it is to answer a bill of exchange of his. And I perceive he hath made use of all other means in the world to do it. But I am resolved to serve him, but not ruin myself, as it may be to part with so much of the little I have by me to keep, if I should by any turn of times lose the rest. At noon I to the change, and there did a little business, and among other things called at Cade's the stationer, where he tells me how my Lord Gerard is troubled for several things in the House of Commons, and in one wherein himself is concerned. And it seems this Lord is a very proud and wicked man, and the Parliament is likely to order him. Then home to dinner, and then a little abroad, thinking to have gone to the other end of the town, but it being almost night I would not, but home again. And there to my chamber, and all alone did there draw up my answer to Sir Robert Brooke's letter, and when I had done it, went down to my clerks at the office for their opinion, which at this time serves me to very good purpose, they having many things in their heads which I had not in the businesses of the office now in dispute. Having done with this, then I home, and to supper very late, and to bed, my wife being yet very ill of her looseness, by which she is forced to lie from me to-night in the girl's chamber.